Open Senate Revenue Committee Friday at 10 o'clock. So we're just going to try to get through this agenda as quick as we can. Let's go in this order because we're going to lose Senator Starr here in about 10 or 15 minutes. So try to get some of our work done, and then we'll get our public hearings. Let's first open a work session on House Bill 2511. This is one, Representative Butler, do you want to say a few words about this? I think we've got it in order.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. 2511 is a bill which you've previously heard. This was the one that had a number of organizations, and I think it was not limited to, and so what happened was that the amendment which you have in the A4 amendment basically adds those four additional fraternal organizations, or not fraternal organizations, service clubs, organizations, and allows them to have property that is for the value and benefit of the communities without being subject to tax.
Okay. Questions? And folks have the A4s, which hopefully get...
That does accomplish the objective.
The objective just to get all of the... I don't see Mr. Simmons, there he is in the back, but his suggestion, which I thought was a really good one, of just getting down to naming the four that we wanted and taking out the service part in a work session.
And we need to move the -4 amendment.
A4s.
Mr. Chair, I move the A4 amendments to House Bill 2511.
Senator Starr has moved the -A4 amendments to House Bill 2511. Discussion. Any objection?
Move House Bill 2511 as amended to the Senate floor with the due pass recommendation.
Senator Starr has moved House Bill 2511 to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Happy to get those major tax changes done for you, Representative Butler. Please, we'll vote on that now. Just for the newly arriving senators, this is we're on 2511, which is the issue of removing the words "or service" from service organizations and just naming the four organizations that Mr. Simmons and Representative Butler mentioned.
First of all, the original language too.
Any discussion? Any objection to that motion? So ordered. Close that work session. Open a work session on Senate Bill 171. Senator Metzger.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Colleagues, we've been a long ways with Senate Bill 171. It's kind of gone one direction and come back another and moved around. And ironically, it's kind of going back to where it started. 171, we were using as a vehicle for a couple of months to talk about the issue of taxes for utilities. And as you are well aware, we have decided to change the direction on that, address that issue through the rate setting process. And the bill came out, Senate Bill 408, the other day out of Senate Business. So this is no longer needed for that purpose. So Senate Bill 171 is the bill that came over originally from the House unanimously. Mr. Wells might be good to come forward just to speak for the PUC. It's simply changed or conformed the federal definition for cogen facilities and then added in the net benefit standard that has been adopted, UM 1011, by the PUC for any suitors for any of our public utilities that they have to, before they can get approval from the PUC, they have to show a net benefit for ratepayers with no general harm to the public. And that has been a rule of the PUC, but it had been suggested that that should be put in statute to ensure its validity going forward. And I hear Mr. Willis could just make a few comments on that. And everything else has been deleted from the bill.
So does anyone have any questions? And Paul, do you have anything you need to add to?
Mr. Chair, the -B11 amendment is before you, and that's the one that has the language that Senator Metzger is referring to.
Any questions for Paul or Senator Metzger? And anyone else wish to speak to this bill since it's changed a great deal before we go? I want to make sure everyone's had time to look it over and think about it. Mr. Wells.
Mr. Chair, and I have not seen the amendments, but based on the description of Senator Metzger, the commission is supportive of the bill with would codify those net benefits that we're currently using. And so the commission is supportive of that, as well as the ministerial correction that was originally in 171 when we had it introduced, and it corrected a little problem that came out of the Senate Bill 1149 from the, I believe it was the 99th session. So the bill at this point, as it sits right now, is pretty close to what we introduced and the net benefits that we currently use. So the commission is supportive of the bill.
Great. Anyone else? Net benefits. Net benefits going once. Okay. Senator Metzger, do you want
to? Oh, Mr. Chair, I move the death B11 amendments to Senate Bill 171.
Senator Metzger has moved the dash B11 amendments to Senate Bill 171. Discussion on that motion. Any objections to that motion? Senator Metzger.
Senator Deckard, I move Senate Bill 171 as amended by the B11 amendments to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Senator Metzger has moved Senate Bill 171 as amended by the B11s to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objections to that motion? Hearing none, so ordered. Senator Metzger, you will...
Happy to do so, and thank you, committee, for the indulgence of the long journey with that bill number.
That's true. That thing changed. Well, it's B11, so
yeah.
They ran out of A and moved into B. Close that work session. Let's go to House Bill 3183 and open a public hearing on House Bill 31. Open a work session on House Bill 3183.
Mr. Chair, members, House Bill 3183 deals with the distribution of income from the common school fund to school districts. What the bill is doing is changing that process. Currently, the funds go to the county treasurers, and are distributed by the county to the school districts. The bill proposes that the funds go directly go to the superintendent of public education and be distributed in from the Department of Education. So it takes the counties, the county treasurer, the county administrator out of that process and makes it more direct.
Great. Any, President Butler, do you want to talk about this bill at all, or I think we might be ready to go?
Mr. Chair, good bill. Do pass. Tom Butler from House 52.
Based on that recommendation.
He's getting better all the time.
That's true. Senator Starr.
Chair, I move House Bill 3183 to the Senate floor to do pass recommendation.
Senator Starr has moved House Bill 3183 to the floor to do pass recommendation. Discussion. Any objections? So ordered. Senator Starr?
Yes.
We'll carry that. Okay. We're doing well. We're not going to hear, we're still working on Senate Bill 427, so that is, that will come back to us next week. Senator Starr, have a wonderful weekend and good luck with your appointment. Open a public hearing on House Bill 3350. Chair Tom Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I've given some handouts to staff, and I'm hopeful that you'll receive those relative to the Small Community Investment Program. And there are staff here that will be willing to testify from OECDD relative to the Small Community or Small City Investment Program. This is a state income tax incentive for new-to-Oregon businesses to locate and provide jobs in financially distressed small communities in Oregon. The bill began in 2001 as a program for distressed communities seeking employers offering high wage rate jobs in small towns and cities in Oregon. 2003, we modified the program to include the expansion to urban growth boundaries of cities. We found out that in many instances, the industrial parks that we were looking for these folks to move into were within the urban growth boundaries. They were still, the original intent of the bill was to make certain that water, sewer, and all other services were provided. We found out that sometimes that is not that is available but not necessarily within the city limits. We also expanded this to include port districts in those same financially distressed counties. The SCIP employs a combination of tools to encourage new to Oregon businesses to set up shop in financially distressed areas. It offers a state income tax abatement from year to year, not to exceed 10 years for those qualifying small companies that would come to Oregon. The OECD administers this program to identify Oregon's financially distressed counties and then the cities within those counties. This is presently within the highest quartile of those counties with unemployment, the highest number of, nine counties, and as well as those with the lowest one-third per capita income. And the next item is that it requires the applicant company to make substantial investments into the communities, both in property, plant, as well as equipment. These assets must have lives of 10 years or more. And then finally, it provides for local control to protect similar existing businesses from unfair competition. We didn't want folks moving into a small rural community that would be incompetent and have a tax benefit, first of all, taking away potentially employees, and secondly, giving them a tax benefit for moving in and competing with existing businesses. So the local control first provides that the OECD Regional Development Officer can charge a fee to certify this new-to-Oregon business and to recertify them on annual renewals, but then it also allows the city council and the county commission in that county, both must agree to the application. So it's got a high level of local control over those businesses that could come to town. Excuse me. And finally, relative to the employees, it requires five or more full-time employees to be continuously employed to retain the qualified year-by-year tax exemption, but up to a maximum of 10 years. And that provided that the minimum compensation would be at 150% of the county per capita income, or 100% plus the full medical benefits based upon the local government health insurance benefits. And as you're aware, a combination of a number of things have changed over the life of this. It started back in 1999. Probably the most important thing that's happened is that wage benefits have increased materially over that period of time, as well as the cost of the medical benefits have increased over that period of time. So the Senate, or the amendments before the Senate today on House Bill 3350, as approved in the House, include the following. As to Section 2, they add a five-year sunset for increased numbers of qualifying counties. The increased numbers of qualifying counties in Section A, or in Section 1, provide that the counties with the highest one-half of the employment in the state of Oregon and the lowest one-half of the per capita income. Now, colleagues, when you have both of those counties, both of those series of counties, you've now, by approving this bill, will have increased the number of counties, and Art Fisher here from OECD, but I think that you add a significant number of counties. My recollection is that you get up towards 21 total counties that could qualify, and staff is shaking their head yes, but 21 counties. But as I went through the counties, the total population is still less than 30% of the whole state of Oregon. And remember that this is in cities of less than 15,000 that it qualifies for. So it would still be in those. It could be in those counties with high unemployment, with the highest unemployment, and with the lowest per capita income, but only in the smaller towns. And then that we, part of the five-year sunset is to try and encourage those to these 21 counties. And then with regard to the minimum wage or the minimum compensation would be based dropping the minimum wage that would be required, minimum compensation be based upon the county per capita income and to pay prevailing wages at that particular point. And finally, we'll hear from the economic development regarding the rural renewable energy development zones, the REDs, relative to the $100 million exemption cap on rural renewable energy development zones, which would be replaced by a new cap as determined by the OECD, but would not exceed $100 million in any single designated zone, so that they could have multiple rural renewable energy development zones. And colleagues, I did get a list, and I think I got this from from your staff identifying the counties that would qualify that have that are in the top one half of the unemployment and the top or in the bottom one half of the per capita income. That would include Baker County, Columbia County, Coos County, Douglas County, but would not include either Coos City or Roseburg City as a result of the fact that those are too large. It continues, or it would also include Gilliam and includes, or it would continue to include Grant, Harney, Lake, Morrow, and Sherman. Those counties are already qualified under the current brackets that of high unemployment, low per capita. And then it would also then include Jefferson, Hood River, Josephine, but not Grants Pass, Klamath, but not Klamath Falls, not Klamath Falls City itself. And then it would include Linn County, Mount Huir, Umatilla, Wallowa, and Wasco, and the cities that could qualify new under this program would include St. Helens. These are cities with large populations. St. Helens with 10,019. North Bend City in Coos with 9,500. Lebanon City and Linn County with 12,950. And Ontario with 10,985. Hermiston with 13,154. And then the Dalles at 12,156. Those are the new cities that could qualify for the SCIP program under the amendments here before you today, or under the program as amended before you today.
Thank you. I know you worked extremely hard putting this program together, both of what last session and
since 1999, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, getting this perfected and targeting folks that are in the very small towns in Oregon and trying to attract some economic development.
And Mr. Chair, I think that and we are still trying to figure out at what level and this the amendments to the program have been vetted thoroughly with the OECD. They finally said you've got to make these changes in the program to make it viable. I understand that we have the potential of a total of four applications that may be in process, either starting or that are pending under the present, but they're all in the port of Marl, where they have that large industrial park there, and some folks are coming into the industrial park to offer five or more jobs in each of those businesses. These would be new to Oregon businesses, new to Oregon jobs.
And that's the key for me, is it's new to Oregon. So these are new jobs that don't exist here. Question for Representative Tom Butler. Mike MacArthur, Brad Higby, thank you. Art Fish.
Sue Kepler.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm Mike MacArthur with the Association of Oregon Counties. I'm here in support of House Bill 3350 being engrossed. On behalf of the Association, we support the bill, but I'd like to add my perspective as the former Sherman County judge and one of the counties that regularly qualified for the Butler program, as we affectionately call it. This was an important tool to us. We attempted to use it. We qualified initially under the program. We weren't able to attract, we haven't at this point, Sherman County has not attracted the business, but being able to offer this program has been an important tool. At one point, we were offering Enterprise Zone, the Butler program, and a farmer near Wasco was offering free land, yet we were unable to attract any type of business. So that shows you the difficulty of attracting new businesses to rural Oregon. Mm-hmm. We have a high school in Sherman County that formerly had 300 kids that has 100 now. Mm-hmm. The capacity is there for new businesses in rural Oregon. We need all these tools that are being offered here are important to us, and so I urge you to continue to expand this program. It's a good one. The other aspect of the bill I also was connected with, and it has to do with the rural energy renewable energy enterprise zone. Sherman County, of course, is the location of development of wind farms, and we attempted to use that program too. originally when that bill was conceived, the intent was to grant the property tax exemption up to $100 million. The way it was interpreted was it had to be $100 million. So what this amendment does is allows by resolution the county governing body to say to specify the amount of the exemption up to $100. Thank you. Al, any questions?
Questions for Judge McArthur? Mr. Fish.
Thank you, Chair Deckert, members of the Senate Revenue Committee. It's a pleasure to be here and to speak. My name is Arthur Fish with the Oregon Economic and Community Development Department, the Business Incentives Coordinator with the department. And really, I have no prepared testimony, and I must apologize. I would have liked to have brought a few of my little simple graphic things for you, but they are in the record from the House testimony, and they match up perfectly with the way things were described by Representative Butler. I have really nothing more to add except to make myself available to answer any questions so that you better understand these programs, both the what we call the business taxable income exemption, because you're really exempting taxable income for one of these new facilities so that, in effect, they are, income tax free for, potentially 10 years. And it is a very useful program or powerful program. It is starting to be used. We have preliminarily certified a facility in Heppner and one in Boardman, and there's some others, and that's one of the better counties for this.
What type of facility?
One is related to telecommunications, and I'm failing to remember right now what the other one was. Well, one's, I think, related to energy. It has to do with Sierra Energy or something to that effect. Biomass, I think. But I could be wrong. So I would apologize if I am. But we do have only six or seven counties that can use it. And having this five-year period where it would really have some state, really widespread statewide significance would give us a chance to really build up some history and real-world practices and, the simplification by dropping the compensation standard for a few years would just help, I think, to get this thing going and make it a powerful tool in addition to enterprise zones and what few things we do have to offer in our state.
Senator George.
If you think about it, we're talking about a remote area in eastern Oregon, for example, but if you look at a map of the United States and you look at eastern Washington, you look at Nevada, you look at Salt Lake City, and you realize that people will go to some places that we might think are, quote, remote.
Mm-hmm.
But they will go there most of the time based upon some positive incentives from the community. Is that what you're finding? In other words, that we almost have to be competitive by providing those incentives?
Chair Deckard, Senator George, members of the committee, yes, I believe that the incentives are an important thing for those types of situations as well as other types of business development issues. It's not just a rural, remote type of thing. And yes, you do see in areas where there is still some amount of development and services and other things, a lot of stuff happening in the areas that you mentioned. And I think Oregon has those types of things. It's seen that kind of experience with Bend and Hermiston and some other places that have Boardman, and incentives have played a role in that, as well as some of the advantages and just building off of some of the attributes that matter. And having good people on the ground to really promote things.
And we would be curious to know the two companies, who they are, I would thank you.
Yeah.
The files on who they are.
Oh, sure. Yeah, Chair Deckard, members of the committee, I have communicated with staff before about the two companies and would be happy to do so again. I can just go back and get the file. I remember their names more than what they do.
What are their names?
Windwave Communication, and I'm thinking the other one is Sierra Energy. And these have been preliminarily certified and are proceeding. I think one's already started construction, to be sure, in Morrow County, and it's not just Boardman. One's in Heppner. I'll gladly go back and check and email staff, more detail about those.
It definitely seems relevant to the program that we have.
It has been around a while, and so, it's been a long time coming just getting these two, but, with only a few counties and some of the complexities, it's been a little difficult.
Okay, so we'll look forward to Senator Brzezinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I understand the incentive process. Do we have anything that, I'm going to say, requires these companies that are receiving these incentives to be obligated to stay here so we get the return that we're getting or we're giving them as to, you know, long-term, some type of clawback?
Chair Decker, Senator Pozanski, members of the committee, to use this exemption year after year, you do have to still be operating. So, and it's a 10-year exemption. And to qualify or be preliminary certified initially, you have to show that your operations will be around for at least the 10 years. So beyond, so there is that level of assurance that this is going to be a ongoing thing. I think one of the things that if Representative Butler might want to help you understand with respect to the income is that they're not getting a benefit insofar unless they're paying potentially some income taxes. And so in many ways we're talking, I think, quite sincerely about taxes that one would not otherwise see in the state otherwise. And that to use that advantage, that exemption, if you will, of that income, they have to be operating through the whole 10-year period. So there isn't anything they get up front that you would want to claw back. It's sort of receive benefit as you go type of thing.
I can follow up.
Yeah, please.
So I understand that they have an obligation of employing five or more new people. I understand that those individuals will be paying income tax on their little salaries. I just don't, maybe Representative Butler can sit down with me and explain what type of offsets we're seeing in the sense of what would be the corporate income tax that's being foregone for this new startup and what that means. Is to, I'm just trying to make sure mm-hmm. that balance. Representative Butler doesn't need it now. I don't think we're going to be moving to the building.
I think it's the sort of thing he likes to explain.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Pozanski, Tom Butler from House District 60. Two things. You're hitting on some very key issues. That is, number one, the current law provides that they have to make an investment in property, plant, and equipment with lives of 10 years or more. And that can be in taxable areas, and in most cases it would be, because the small towns are not the ones with the enterprise zones. The one key issue that we're doing here is that we're trying to we have enterprise zones, which are a property tax issue, which is local, and the state contributes certainly relative to the school. But here we're saying the state is contributing by foregoing the income tax. But the important thing is, and that my experience from business tells me this, when I get a new-to-Oregon business coming in and opening the doors and having a grand opening and joining the Chamber of Commerce and all of those sorts of things, the business is going to be 3 to 5 years before it's actually profitable to start off with. And so during that time, I have the potential of all of the property taxes off of that business because they've had to make that investment in property, plant, and equipment. And the property certainly could be leased and just do leasehold improvements, but the lease has to be for 10 years or more. And then the second issue that's so very important is that what these folks do is that they are investing in the community by hiring five or more full-time employees, and that's what the department gets as a service fee annually to go back and certify that there are five or more full-time employees there in order to continue to qualify for the program. So this is kind of a state contribution in the areas where you don't have the economic development or the enterprise zones to allow those folks to have jobs where previously we've just been unable to get those folks in. But if I offer a tax incentive, a year-to-year tax incentive, income tax incentive, for a business that has no income, then they really have, all they've done is just invested in some property plant equipment, paid property taxes locally, and had employees paying income taxes.
Thank you.
Higby, you have something you'd like to add there?
Yes, Mr. Vice Chair and members of the committee, Brad Higby, appearing on behalf of the Renewable Northwest Project in support of House Bill 3350. RNP is made up of members who include public interest organizations, environmental organizations, and rural energy developers. Very simply, we worked closely with former Judge MacArthur and some of the other county officials last session in creating the Red Zone, the Rural Renewable Energy Development Zone program, which is a flexible tool to help promote not only the development of renewable energy, but provide some economic development assistance for certain areas of the state. And as he had testified previously, we had thought it would allow the counties, if they voluntarily chose to participate in this program, a little more flexibility. And with the amendment you'll find at Section 4 of the bill, it will in fact do that, so that if a county chooses to use this tool to lure a, for example, wind developer, they can then simply request authorization for property tax abatement for the amount they want. It's not a one-size-fits-all, got to take $100 million or nothing thing, excuse me, with the amendment. And to conclude, Mr. Chair, it's important tool in that it's flexible. It's not confined by enterprise zone boundaries. You can actually use it where the wind resource is instead of jury-rigging whatever might be available currently. And it is a useful tool to increase not only the supply of energy, the supply of clean energy, but help boost the diversity of energy resources in the Northwest, and can serve a major purpose, a big shot in the arm in some of these rural communities in terms of the economic impact. As an example, property owners who have wind turbines planted on their land receive annual lease payments between $2,000 and $4,000 per turbine while they continue with their ranching or farming operations right up essentially to the base of the turbine. And counties and other local government jurisdictions receive a fairly significant shot in their local property tax revenue arm, if that imagery makes any sense. I'll have to connect the dots later.
One of his graphs.
So to that extent, it's a very attractive tool for them as well to help support their other services. Okay. That'll conclude. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Higley? Okay, thank you. That completes our testimony signed up for HB 3350. And so we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 3350. We'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2868. And we, it's one thing I like about this committee. You know, we keep changing staff. I never had a committee that staff just comes and goes so quickly around here. Yeah. All right. So please tell us what we have before us.
Thank you, Chair Metzger. We have House Bill 2868 as amended, which simplifies the time requirements for filers and clarifies the administrative process for handling a filer's application for continued qualification of a parcel as a small tract forest land, specially assessed property. Under current law, within 30 days of the purchase or transfer of a property designated as small tract farmland, a purchaser or transferee must apply to the county assessor for continued qualification of this designation. No filing fees or late filing fees are charged at the present time. The county appraisers, assessors, have worked very hard with House staff and Chairman Butler and the Committee on Revenue to put together a clarification, because under current law, once you miss that 30-day deadline and you're disqualified, it's really was unclear previously how you would be redesignated, okay? And, of course, when you're redesignated as something other than small tract farmland, I can go back through the process here, which is in the first section, describing you can be either designated as forest land or something other than that, but your taxes that the back taxes on what you've been disqualified from as small tract farmland have to be paid. So it's very important to understand, I think, you know, and clarify how you will be redesignated, because it affects the amount of taxes, back taxes, you'll have to pay. And I can go through that for you. Basically, it clarifies that additional taxes will be computed if a parcel is disqualified from small tract farmland special assessment, unless the tax assessor disqualifies the parcel from STF and determines that it does not constitute forest land. The parcel will automatically qualify for a special assessment as either eastern or western forest land designation. If a disqualified STF parcel is eligible for a special designation as western or eastern forest land, as exclusive farm use or non-exclusive farm use or wildlife habitat, then the additional taxes, that back taxes, will be computed as the difference between the taxes that were paid under the STF assessment and the amount that would have been owed under one of these other designations for the lesser of 10 years or the number of consecutive years the land was designated STF. if a disqualified parcel is not eligible for one of these other types of special assessment, then the additional back taxes will be computed as the difference between the taxes that were paid under the STF assessment and the taxes that would have been owed against the land for the lesser of 5 years or the number of consecutive years that the land is designated forest land. It's just a clarification of the process. The assessors believed that because of the timing of people coming in late when they want the special assessment, say they're given a notice on a certain date and they don't come in and refile until after July 1, it sort of confuses the process for the assessors. They have to reassess things. And so if the refiling is late, it creates a $200 filing fee.
Thank you. Let's have Desdane or Miller or Christina McNitt.
Mr. Vice Chair, my name is, and members of the committee, my name is Dennis Day, and I'm the Polk County Assessor. And I'm also here representing the Oregon State Association of County Assessors. House Bill 2868 was our only bill introduced this session, so it's one that we're in favor of, and we hope to have your approval of this. In a nutshell, what this is basically trying to do is administratively make this easier for all parties involved, not only the county assessors but the property owners. The current legislation, as you heard, says that upon sale or transfer within 30 days it was the responsibility of the property owner, not necessarily, and that caused a lot of confusion. People buy a property and their first instinct is not to come down to the county assessor's office and requalify for a small tract option. Forest land. What this proposal, what we put together here is we put the burden on the county assessor to, rather than the landowner, to notify them of their requirements to requalify under this STF program. So we will take the responsibility, and it says in the bill, I think it's on page 2, line 3 through 10 is primarily that part. Basically says we would send out the notice of intent to disqualify these people, and we would trigger that notification time, and within 30 days they would have to come to us and make the decision to re-qualify for the STF program or opt out of it. So it's kind of took away the burden of the property owner and put it on our laps to notify these people, and we feel that is better administrative-wise than dealing with recording dates, 30 days. So that puts the burden on us. Also, the assessors were concerned that if the new owner elects not to be in the SDF program, they would be removed from the SDF program, but they would revert automatically back to the forest land program, which they originally qualified before they could have the option. So we felt that it would, in the fairness and also the processing of this, that you've already qualified yourself under the forest land program to make the option to be under the SDF program. So the only penalty to the new property owner is if they did not come back in 30 days after we notified them, that they would roll back to the forest land program. And the penalty would only be they'd have to pay the difference in the STF and the original special assessed forest land. So that was one of the key provisions that we were looking for. And also the other provision we threw in is a lot of times people get confused of all the paperwork. And under the STF program, once you opt out, you can't come back in for 5 years. And so we felt that they should have a one last chance in the year that we remove them to have that ability to requalify. And that's why we put in the late filing date of December 15th. With that, though, we also felt we needed a $200 provision in there for the processing, because we've already removed, already did all the paperwork. but we've given you one more opportunity to, you know, what happens a lot of times, people get their tax bill and voila, they see this difference in tax, and that's when it really comes to light. And so that provision allows them one more opportunity to make that requalification, and then they won't be able to do that for another 5 years if they meet that December 15th date. So those, in a nutshell, were the things that we were trying to do as assessors to better administrate this new SDF program, which a lot of you committee members dealt with last session. So if there's any questions, Norm Miller and Christina McNant, they have some testimony they would like to present to you.
Go ahead, Ben.
Go right down the line. Good morning, Mr. Vice Chair and members. For the record, I'm Christina McNitt, representing the Oregon Small Woodlands Association. I specifically want to say thank you to Dennis Day, and he's representing, as he said, the Oregon State Association of County Assessors. But we really appreciate their efforts in bringing this bill forward and allowing us to work with them on the House side and the Department of Revenue to tweak it even further. I won't speak long, but just to let you know, again, in context, the small tract forest land option is that option where the non-industrial woodland owners pay their property taxes on their forest land on a 2080 program rather than paying 100% ad valorem every year. Simply, the theory behind that was that the non-industrial woodland owner isn't generating revenue off from that property every year like an industrial manager would be. And we want to encourage landowners to keep their land in the forest land base. So that's why we even have the small tract forest land option. It passed last session, and I would say that this, you know, we've had 2 years of implementation, and this bill really provides another opportunity if you lose your chance to requalify upon a sale or transfer of the property. We appreciate that very much. We're happy to pay the $200 fee. We recognize it's a cost to the county to handle that paper processing work. We also were under the impression when the original bill passed in 2001, if you were disqualified through a sale or transfer, you would be disqualified from the program, the 2080 program, but you weren't disqualified in a special assessment for forest land. So this bill clarifies that when you are disqualified from how you pay your taxes, that does not disqualify you necessarily from the fact that you are in a forest land special assessment rather than falling all the way back down to real market value. And I think with that, I'll just pass it on to Norm Miller. I'd be happy to answer any questions and really appreciate, again, all the work done on behalf of the county assessors.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Norm Miller with the Oregon Department of Revenue. I manage the timber tax and senior disabled deferral programs for the department. Actually, I can be even shorter. This bill really is a cleanup of what we tried to do. The major legislation that we implemented from last session, it strengthens the programs, and I think you've had a pretty good description of what really is changing. So with that, I'll be happy to answer any questions. I know it's a simple little program.
Yeah. Questions? Senator Brzezinski.
I have a simple question. Pretty simple program. So just walk me through when you have someone that qualifies for the forest exception and then into this small tract program. When they sell the property, if we continue to allow the future buyers to continue the program, school districts, the small rural school districts, when do they realize any of the money that's on these deferments? Is this a different program as to where on the timber? I hear from small school districts that because of the small timber exemptions on paying on the taxes, that I thought that the time when they sold the timber, but it sounds to me like maybe the timber's never being sold because they're not in production on the small tract.
Okay, you can do the cleanup, Mr. Chair, Senator Brzezinski. Let me walk you then first through the process. We have people who have property that could be any piece of property within the state that's larger than 2 acres, and for this particular small tract forest land option, larger than 10 acres.
First, they meet the qualifications of forest land, which says that, that they either have trees or have a solid plan for putting trees onto their property within a certain timeline. And in filling out the application, they're making the commitment to grow and harvest timber on that property. There are some options then. The Maine Forest Land Program, they pay a special assessment on a special assessment value every year through the property tax system. The taxes then go to all the taxing districts within the area. That's pretty simple. The small tract forest land option then really is another way for those people to pay for their property tax. They pay 20% of their property tax annually, so that's distributed as normal. The other portion of the property taxes then is paid when they harvest timber. The tax rate is established to, on the average, collect, you know, say statewide or Western Oregon, Eastern Oregon wide, the foregone property tax.
So let me ask you, if you have a small tract forest land that's in production in the sense that they're harvesting so much per year, when whatever they harvest, they have to account for, and that point, the 80% is paid based on the harvest level for that period?
Mr. Chair, Senator Przanski, that's correct. When they pay based on the volume that they harvest from that land.
I understand. Now I'm getting more clarity. Every year they're going to pay 20% of whatever's due as to on their taxes. But if and when they actually harvest, then they're going to pay the extra 80% based on the volume that they take off the land. Okay?
Yes.
That makes it more clear. These are new areas for me.
Other questions? Okay. Thank you. Anybody else wish to testify on House Bill 2868? Okay, now we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2868. We're going to stand at ease just for a moment. Members, if you could hang around just for a second. And then Chair moves House Bill 2868 to forward due pass recommendation. Discussion? Any objection? So ordered, and please mark Senator Starr excused. And Mr. Chair, we heard the 3350 close the public hearing, and it's still in the committee, and we just moved to House Bill 2868.
Great. Who should carry? Anyone want to carry 28?
I can carry that.
Great.
Senator Torch.
No small forest land issues. Okay, so he'll carry that. And I think we'll hold 3350. I'd like to see from the department at least a little bit of paper in terms of,
I can learn more about it too,
how it's worked, and a little more information would be helpful before we pass that one out. With that, we are adjourned, and I don't think we're going to meet until Wednesday or Thursday of next week. Have a good week.
All right.
Thanks, Rick.